Okay. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
See, the leases redeliberation started up sort of about January time. Over the last couple of months, I think the boards have had some discussions on most of the key issues. They've made some tentative decisions on lease options to focus more on just capturing those options where there's a significant economic incentive to exercise those options, which is bringing in probably reducing slightly the scope of the options that would be captured in the measurement as compared to the exposure draft. We've also made some tentative decisions around variable lease payments. There they've tentatively decided that they would capture variable lease payments that depend on either an index or a rate, and we would capture in measurement anything that, any payments that really are lacking in commercial substance. The boards are still thinking, re-deliberating whether they want to capture a sort of, I'll call it another level of variable lease payments up to maybe some sort of high recognition threshold, and the staff will be bringing back some further analysis on that in a future paper. The boards have also requested that the staff perform some targeted outreach around distinguishing between a lease and a service arrangement. So the staff have prepared to the boards some sort of alternative wording, really, to develop a little bit further what was in the exposure draft. One format of that is really taking what's in the exposure draft, which is quite similar to what exist today, and updating, making some small updates to reflect some of the concerns that we understand practice has today with the current definition. One of the other alternative approaches would be to look at the control piece that exists in that definition and align it a lot more with the control definition we have in the revenue project and also in consolidation recently. The second key area that the boards have asked us to perform some targeted outreach on is whether or not all leases should be considered the same, or whether there's a view that there's different types of leases that exist here. A number of respondents questioned whether all lease transactions should be considered similar to acquiring the underlying asset with finance. And particularly, there are a number of concerns with, including from a number of users, around whether the financing profile that you get in profit and loss from a lessee perspective really was the right answer for all lease contracts. So the boards have asked the staff to perform some targeted outreach, getting additional feedback on that. Those are probably the main areas. The boards have also made some tentative decisions in some of what I'd call the sort of tier two issues around short-term leases, treatment of purchase options, some scoping decisions, and around whether we need any additional criteria around what a sale and purchase is, or whether we should just be looking to other guidance rather than adding extra words into the leases standard on that. So that's probably a sort of summary of where we're at. Obviously, there'll be some further discussion in the board meeting next week on some of these issues as well.
Thank you. So, as I said earlier, on this project also, we very much appreciate, I mean, the way the board is moving forward, trying to solve the concerns that have arisen. And in certain above areas, we believe you are heading in the right direction. Starting with the definition of a lease and whether the board should move to having two types of lease, we have appreciated the fact that you launched this targeted outreach effort, but for a group like EFRAG, unfortunately within the timing that was offered to us, we were not able to really consider sufficiently in depth, I mean, the various proposals that have been put in that paper that supported the effort. So we are not bringing some response to these issues. One thing that we want to say is that, of course, we wouldn't see this type of targeted outreach activities to be a proper substitute for an eventual re-exposure. I mean, if that has to be the case, targeted outreach cannot replace that part of the process. That said, we can nevertheless bring the two elements. I think it's fair to say that EFRAG would agree with the board that not all leases are financing transactions. So, and whether lease agreements which are not financing transactions should be dealt differently from other non-executory contracts to us remain a subject for debate. And we would, in fact, and you know that, have liked that this debate take place prior to the board moving ahead. That, nevertheless, I mean, if the boards move ahead as they seem to intend in this, we really, at this stage, can only repeat that to us the cuts between lease and service must really be right. And the final guidance be such that only, I mean, genuine leases trigger asset and liability recognition, so that in the grey areas, the guidance should lead to a more restrictive interpretation rather than a broad interpretation if there are actually grey areas. So on this issue of the definition of a lease, and whether there are two models, so far we cannot offer more feedback. I'm sorry for that. Don't know whether we commend this first and move to the other issue afterwards.
Yeah, I wanted to just elaborate on what David pointed out, I think it fits with what you just said, that not all leases are capital leases. We've decided, at least tentatively, that for short-term leases, those under a year, where the ED would have put these on the balance sheet as a capital lease but at a simplified measurement, we are treating them as operating leases. So I think that goes, you know, in the direction that you had asked for. And I just want my other point on the possibility of re-exposure. And naturally, we've got criteria for doing that, and at the end of the deliberations, the board looks at those. On the split between finance lease and other than finance, we still are keeping the right-of-use model for those as proposed in the exposure draft. The issue is really one of presentation in the income statement. I would look at it, and it's not a fundamental change from the proposal at all. It's really, it's a presentation change that was strongly supported by our constituents.
It's true, Paul, there is no, for the ones which are not financed, but bring the P&L effect will be exactly the same as before. You have a charge, which is rental expense.
Sure.
Different that you have something on the balance sheet as an asset on a liability that you didn't have under the old IS 17, possibly. That is a change, and that is resented by some as a significant change. This is why it's very important that we get it right, whether it is a service or a lease, is very important, as François has said. Yeah.
I agree that that's maybe a significant change from IAS 17, but it's not a significant change from our exposure.
Oh, okay.
That's granted.
Yeah. So in terms of exposure, we may, on that basis, not need to re-expose.
That's fine.
I agree. Okay.
No, but we appreciate it's too early to say so. I'm fine. But
I think overall, I think what I'd like to add, because
Jerome was a bit concerned about the extent of the changes that the new standards will imply. If you look at the succession of tentative decisions, not really decisions, but they are pretty much now grounded, in terms of simplifications as compared to the ED, where we are now, I think, a lot of simplifications, contingent rents, the term of the lease renewal, the exclusion of the short-term ones, which are now not modified at all. I think the extent of the changes brought about by standard will be much less than you could have expected initially.
Following up on that, if you allow me, just one thing or two. First one, just as a reaction to what was said earlier, I think the question, Philippe, is not the difference. I mean, you moved from clear explanations about the difference between finance lease or not to finance lease or service contract. This is not the issue. The issue is more whether operating leases go to the balance sheet or not. And as you very rightly said in the beginning of your intervention, that is a huge and major change on the balance sheet, including the effects that it has on both sides of it. Of course, yes, there have been very useful and clever, I think, deliberations or tentative decisions of the board, which I really take good note of. You mentioned that you always do cost and benefit analysis, and that's an area where you can effectively quantify things. And my appreciation, and I think the one that results from all my discussions with everyone, Philippe, is that certainly it's better with these decisions than if those decisions had not been taken. But it's a marginal effect as opposed to or against the notion that is still the notion that I hear also everywhere and home in any case. That's in that context too, there was no need for change, and that operating leases are not to be on the balance sheet from an economic standpoint, and that was alluded to when he referred to those arguments by David. So I don't want confusion here. The effect is marginal as measured against the comment that were made. So François says it's a little early. It's good if we have some more time, because the mountain to climb for us is still extremely high.
Let's just take back the. This is a $600 billion U.S. dollar industry per annum. We have standards that allow most of that to stay off balance sheet. When you sign a lease, you are committed. You have an obligation that leads to resources leaving the organization. We can measure it extremely accurately. That meets all the definitions of a liability. And frankly, I think it's been a disgrace that we've never had those on balance sheet before. And interestingly, well, when we first started looking at this issue over 10 years ago, there was a lot of opposition to bringing it on balance sheet. Now, if you read the comments, they are very supportive. So I think the argument's been won, Jerome, that this is important to bring this on balance sheet. I think it makes a huge change. I think it's something that people have felt has been an off-balance sheet industry for too long. The analysts have been multiplying the operating leases by five in just a rough term of art to try and come to these numbers. Now we'll give them them. And I think that's a huge step forward, frankly.
To respond to you very briefly, David, I personally added a sentence in our comments saying that indeed something very important had been done in the previous step when the change you referred to was made, and that it was, as far as I can tell, not understood by anyone as only a half step by then. Now it's presented as just a half step, as if the new step that's proposed was absolutely as critical and needed from the point of view of the good economic representation of business. And frankly, I don't think that's the case. Let me say, there is no systemic issue. You're mentioning big numbers. There's no systemic issue here whatsoever. There might be, because of those big numbers, a systemic issue if such a decision is taken to swollen the balance sheets. And So really, that's typically an area where, as you know, we've been discussing the needs, and frankly, you know that users and analysts and all those financial markets, primary operators, all frankly have the feeling that, including in the United States, which is, I'm fully aware, a critical piece of the puzzle here, are happy with the way it works, know how to read the financial statements, live with it, and we're creating a problem rather than solving it. I know there's a notice, and I'm all in favor of the United States joining. It does not free us from the need to make all the cost-benefit analysis here very carefully and have discussions, and everyone has to change one's mind. Frankly, here, I want to signal worries, extreme worries, as you know.
Well, I disagree with almost everything you said there, Jerome. I do think it's a systemic issue. The U.S. Congress thought it was one, and this was a key issue in this memorandum of understanding. Most of the leases actually in Europe. The other big market is America. And these things, people have asked for a long time to get these on balance sheet. Certainly some people would rather have them off. There's an industry out there getting them off. And I think it's been a major defect in financial reporting. This hasn't been shown. It meets all the criteria under the conceptual framework. And frankly, people have got away with it far too long.
I don't want to prolong the debate much further, David. At this sort of conceptual level, I think I would just reiterate what Francois said, though, that I think that if you continue down the direction you're going, one of the concerns we still have is to draw an appropriate line between service contracts, which may involve some use of
asset,
and whether there is actually an asset, because the comment you made about you've got a contract which means you have liabilities, that applies to any unexecuted exitutory contract, arguably, and you know,
we
haven't got that debate going.
But that's the key issue, Mike.
And I think Jerome's comment was that nobody wants these liabilities on the balance sheet, and I just don't think that's true.
No.
I didn't say nobody, I said
users. Everybody is happy with what's there now, which, if you turn it around, is nobody wants a change.
I'm not sure. I think I was specific about users and analysts here. And frankly, the demand and really expressed is not obvious to me. And as it comes from the SEC and from other in the United States, discussions, including during our last meetings here around this table, have shown to me that there was misperceptions and misunderstandings, and in particular that the demand was more targeted towards having more information based on a suspicion that not enough transparency was given to investors, as opposed to changing the way in which, I mean, what you have in the balance sheet. So not only is it something that could have been discussed at conceptual level, but also at practical level. And there is an obvious disagreement, I think. Just to say it again, the difference between lease and service is critical, but it will not change, as was said by Paul, it will not change at all. The effect, the impact, the economic impact on the proposed DD, to be clear.
DK, you wanted to come in?
Yeah, I want to say a couple of comments here, because when I met Jerome at Paris, I was very impressed, and I continue to be impressed with his consistency, with his arguments, and I appreciate
consistently
that.
Wrong, is that what you're saying?
I think he's wrong, but that's okay. No, but the point is that I think Jerome made a couple of comments that I would like to get some clarification. He said there's no marginal effect. Marginal effect from what? From the exposure draft or from the...
The discussion about the frontier between lease and services will lead to possibly marginal effects in terms of the size in dollar terms that of what will be brought by the AD to the balance sheet.
I think the entire board, both the boards clearly are aware of the tension between the service and the lease, and I think that is given. But in terms of users, I understand from the users that they take all the operating leases, put it on the balance sheet, and discount it at a flat rate of 8%. That's the standard discounting. So I think that's the wrong information, discounting at 8% as a flat because they don't have anything else. Virtually every user told that they take the information, what is given in the footnotes, and put it on the balance sheet and capitalize it. That's the one I spoke to, or maybe you and I speak to different users. But the point is that I don't think there is anything conceptually you can argue that there is no asset here. The right of use is an asset. And on the short-term leases, I can tell you, when the first time when the board deliberated, only myself, David, and Bob Garnett, who is not on the board, voted for much more liberal ones. And luckily, this time, the board voted much more to make it 12 months. And I think the board is moving in the right direction, is very much aware of the cost benefits, would like to give the breaks, and that's why the short-term lease is a classic example why board felt that even though conceptually there is a right answer that it should be capitalized, we have given the exemption. And I think I really feel that the board has been very responsive in trying to do it, and especially this term of the lease, there's another one which we have diluted it to make it more sensible, and so is the case with contingent consideration. And I feel very passionate about it, that the board has been very responsive to the comments to make it more sensible.
I think that's true, and that's part of the comments that we wanted to make beyond the definition of a lease and the two models. So moving indeed to the lease term, and as Paul suggested, we are happy with the decision to exempt short-term leases from asset and liability recognition. That was that meets our recommendation on that one. We would prefer if it was not an accounting policy choice. Frankly, we generally do not favor those options. Nevertheless, we still have a concern of the short-term definition being too restrictive. I mean, we thought that approximately 12 months was the right cut, because don't remember whether it was in Poland or elsewhere, but we had the cases that 12 months that in fact were always 13. That could be the case, that would be better. These terms still, the decisions you've made on options, clearly, again, that's going to the right direction. Here we have, in fact, an uncertainty in our understanding of exactly where you're heading to with the notion of clear or significant economic incentive. Is that exactly what is in I-17 today, or is it something different? From our discussion with the team, we've understood that in fact it was no longer the same wording as in I-17, because it had to be the same wording as with the Americans. If that's the case, can we have at least in the basis for conclusions a reference to the existing I-17, so that there is no question that it is the same thing? And if that's the case, we support it. If it's broader than that, we would not support. In our comment letter, keeping what we have in I-17 today was our fallback position, and that it remains. And especially, that David, if you want the argument to be that it's these liabilities that you put to the balance sheet and nothing else. It must be that.
Yeah, understand.
If I continue with the variable lease payments, we remain strongly of the view that rentals based on the performance of the entity should not be included in the measurement of lease liabilities. So here again, we welcome that. You seem to have decided to have excluded from the measurement of the liability a contingent payment other than index-based or those which are reasonably certain. But that's where the uncertainty arises. Would you consider that something that a rental which is based on, for example, a turnover, is something which is reasonably certain, or doesn't it belong to that? So depending on depending on where you are on this, we support more or less.
More or less or more.
This was a big issue in the discussion. I'm sympathetic what you're saying, Francoise, because personally I would not capitalize those. And the question is, do you do that one? You know, the P&L effect's going to be the same regardless. It's going to be the balance sheet that's going to be affected. And does it matter in that situation? Is it something that, and I think David was going to test both that and the basis of, you know, is the lease term slightly fraudulent, you know, in the sense it's, you know, you pay a cent, whereas in fact, you know, you clearly can't get that, and do we do something about anti-abuse or whether we just leave it as it stands? That's one of the issues. So it is an issue we're doing outreach on. Not right, David?
Absolutely.
What's the answer so far?
I think the answer, certainly, particularly if you speak to industries such as retail, would be pretty consistent with how you've articulated. And if you include, and there's a practical piece here as well around if you are going to include something of a high significance level, you get into the usual discussion of, you know, what is that threshold? What do you call it? How's that interpreted? So we're certainly hearing, I think, through our targeted outreach so far around that, consistent views, what you've expressed. Although there are some who, some users have always been split on this. Some say they support the position you've articulated. Some would say, I just want a best guess out there. That's a number I want to see. So, you know, their views probably haven't changed, but I'd say on balance so far it's been consistent on what you said.
But the latter might be solved by some form of disclosure rather than necessarily capitalising things which are.
Yep. We've had this argument for years. I mean, there are two views. Jim Leisman was always thinking of New York Giants Stadium, you know, and the fact that it's always full so you could just book it. But I think of, you know, Stenhouse Muir FC and what's Saturday afternoon in Scotland, you know, where they announce the spectators rather than the team, it's quicker. And these are the sort of things that, it's just different. And I think we're just two different mindsets working here. I personally prefer the view you express, Mike. But I was in a minority in this one.
The other thing I'd just raise in terms of the definition of short-term leases, I think one of the reasons we feel that is restrictive is because of the you have to take account of all options. And for example, an option to renew at market rent doesn't seem to us to really be much of an option that you would need to take into account in terms of saying whether it should be on or off balance sheet framework.
I think we don't take one. What did we do about that, David? I think we don't take that into account, do we? It's got to be some economic incentive or something. It's not short term.
You wouldn't get to short term on that. So to meet our proposed short term definition, it's got to be what I'd call a very plain vanilla lease. However, when we think about the lease term definition, as you say, you wouldn't factor in the fair value renewals there.
But as I say, I think one of our concerns about where you are with offering the relief for short term leases, why we say it's restrictive, is because I think there are certain elements of options which you could legitimately take into account in that, where people are, if you like, just almost protecting their right to renew the contract, but
at market rate.
I mean, it doesn't strike us that we should include dealing with it as a short-term lease frame.
We are not very consistent in the way we exclude short-term leases which have options renewal, and the way we look at options when you are in the scope.
Yeah.
We are not consistent in the way we assess the options, and that's probably a puzzle that you'll talk about that. It's not fine.
Yeah, you're right, because the short-term lease, the way we have decided or attempted to the last week, was it's a maximum of 12 months. That includes all options and all. We don't want the earth-moving equipment that you borrow for 3 months to be on the balance sheet. That's the fundamental thing. And the lease definition talks about significant economic incentives. Now you start putting this. Clearly, it will shorten the population that comes into the short-term lease, but I think the idea is to give them, not to bring the earth-moving equipments into the picture, but photocopiers, if you are renewing every year, you need to think it in the broader lease definition.
The only other thing I might just observe in passing, because I think you alluded to that there was still an industry out there of getting things off balance sheet, is I did think the board had missed a slight trick in looking at the criteria for financing leases, because I thought if the lessor was a financier, then that was a pretty good indication that what you were getting was finance.
Business model. Business model.
Business model. Business model. I'm not going to break cards.
I think in football terms, is it two times your load?
High tackle, we'll ignore it. Yeah.
That is a comment we've heard from others. Obviously, they wouldn't use that term either.
I think I'm going to keep my player in the game for today.
I'm sorry, as a non-English native speaker, I didn't understand this exchange, so I'll come back to the question of lessor. I'm sorry, I didn't understand. I come back just to the question of lessor. What's going to happen next to lessors? Because I understood that when the previous standard was issued, in fact, we didn't know there was another one coming. I know there will be another one coming on lessor, because obviously it was in your previous city. You just put it on the side for some reason, if I understand correctly. Or should we discuss it now? What is their fate going to be? What can we tell them very clearly? Or what can you tell ourselves to start with, so that we know?
Okay, what's the fate of the lessor?
Depends what half the people around this table decide. Now, the staff are actually, I think when we met with the boards in January, the boards recommended that the staff do not necessarily address straight up the decision around what the lessor accounting model should be, but carry on thinking about issues such as variable lease payments, lease term, etc., from both the lessee and lessor side, because I think thinking of both sides of that would be useful, and that was the feedback we had from a number of people. The staff are now working on sort of having worked through a number of those issues, sort of next on the list, if you like, is to start thinking about what our analysis for lessor accounting on terms of the model should be and what our recommendations to the boards will be. The staff will not be bringing back that analysis this month, I don't think, but it's something that, you know, we would like to think about bringing at least back some discussion, hopefully next month, but obviously it will depend on everything else that's working here. But the staff would like to start asking some boards some more questions on that, coming up soon.
But even we say hospitals consistently wrongly, I'm sure. I'm continuing to be consistent. That there was some link between the lessor and the lessee, and that it was not totally reasonable to deal with one, not the other one. But you can say consistently right things about that, I'm sure, David.
Well, we haven't talked about it, but what came through, I think, quite clearly in the responses was that the lessor model isn't broken. And that people did not like the compromise, which I don't think the boards like much either, to be frank. And that the way we're going with lessees is pretty similar to what we have in 17, except we're actually capitalising operating leases, so why do we have to start messing about a lot with the lessor side? And my personal view is there might not be a lot of change, to be honest. David, do you think that's a fair comment about it? You don't know what the board's going to do. They may sort of take leave of their senses and do something stupid. But
that's certainly some of the feedback that came through in the roundtables. I think if we're having, if there's support for, I'll call it two types of leases, I think when the boards have been thinking about that, they've been thinking about it from both the lessee side and the lessor side. So then naturally you have the question around, are you moving the line from where it is today or not, and then thinking through where that may lead you.
One area whether we discuss the lessor or not would be the sublease, the head lease and the sublease. How do that interaction comes into picture? So that's something we have to take it up, just even if we keep the lessor as it is, how do we do the interaction between the lessee and lessor in a sublease situation? So that's one thing we have to take it up for sure.
I mean, Jerome is right in saying that we have considered during the past that we thought that developing the two or thinking of the two models in parallel was beneficial, because if something makes sense on one side, it should make sense on the other. So it was beneficial to move the two thinking in parallel. When you reach conclusions that make sense both sides, I mean, you still have the time to think whether changing necessary accounting is worthwhile or not. But, lesser accounting is worthwhile or not.
I know that on some issues we're saying we can change our minds, and on some issues we're saying we cannot change our minds, and we need some criteria, maybe a standard about that.
Well, it's what I think, really, that's what counts.
Well, at least until the 1st of July.
And we are counting days. 72 days left.
Hours and minutes, we have
72 working days left.
From you just said, generally, you or all of you prefer symmetrical or asymmetrical.
I don't think we necessarily go that far. I think what we're certainly saying is that the conclusions you come to on one side of the fence should inform the conclusions you're coming to on the other side of the fence. And if you come to different conclusions, depending on which side of the fence you are, then that may tell you something about whether or not your conclusions are right.
Tells you something about the fence, maybe.
Or the fence, yes. So it's no more, no less than that.
On Lisa's sound, that was all we had to offer so far.
Good job. Okay.
I just wanted to circle back just to one comment that Francois made in her opening discussion, just on the targeted outreach we're doing currently and the time. I met with, I saw you earlier on this week, and met with some of the FREG staff. So I did spend a bit of time with them, walking them through a little bit more of the materials. I think you've got a TEG meeting 6th, 8th of April, and what I said to the staff is, well, hopefully their discussion with me can help them develop some materials for that meeting, and we'd certainly like to engage in that meeting and, you know, get some additional feedback from you on those issues in that meeting and feed that into our process. So.
Well, that's very, very welcome, because I thought you had to stop this target the outreach at an earlier date. But if that's the case, that we will welcome, because then we can be of help.
Yes.
The point made by Francoise was a more general one. I've noted down outreach cannot be a substitute for re-exposure. There are material changes to any standard. This applies to leases, maybe to revenue, maybe in future. If there are, during the redeliberation phases, major changes to a standard, we believe that re-exposure under the spirit of the Constitution should apply.
Well, we have precise rules on re-exposure, and that would be, have we moved in the direction of what people asked us to do in the exposure draft, which in fact we have here, very markedly. Secondly, what's the effect of changes? And the changes are now going to be a lot less than they are in the exposure draft. There's going to be a lot of the old standard preserved now, well, not in the same words, but in the same counting. So I think there won't be that much change over it. This is going to be an easy one.
It's a general point. If there are material changes to any standard, then there should be exposure. It's a general point.
That's not happening.
Alberto, if we have exposed the solution, all the arguments have been discussed, and then we say, overall, we agree with the feedback and we don't change, why do you expose something which has been totally discussed?
What we have to do, though, is to do the outreach, and that's what we're trying to do. Have we got the words right? But we can't keep re-exposing the words, we'll just keep on going on forever.
Well, it's good to see you agree among yourselves in English.
You always do.
Well, I think we had Jerome, we had that discussion during last week's FRAC meeting, and I think it's by far too early to talk about re-exposure, and we have clear criteria, and we tick them off in the end. And so far, I think we are not there.
Okay.
Insurance.
Thank you very much.